You're listening to Beyond the Label, a raw, real-life look at living with disabilities. The views and comments expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of the AMAA or our sponsors. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Beyond the Label, a raw, real-life look at living with disabilities. Presented by the Adaptive Martial Arts Association, the nation's leading resource and support network for the adaptive martial arts community. Check them out at adaptivemartialarts.org. Breaking barriers, one move at a time.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Label. I'm JD.
I'm Charlie Murphy. Yeah.
Hey, today, Charlie, we're joined by Devin Fernandez. And Devin's been a part of our organization since the beginning.
Oh, very nice.
Hello, everyone. Good evening.
Right around the time you threw out the challenge, we were looking for some folks to join us and help us on the consulting board, and Devin is like, hey, I can help with that. So
very nice. What is your what's your background, Devin?
In
martial arts? Do you have a background in martial arts? Or
yes, I have a second degree black belt in Nippon Ninjutsu, Nidan, and also in Kokusai Jujutsu, second degree black belt in that as well. And I've been training for over 21 years. I've been teaching the martial arts for over 15 years. So it's been a while. And primarily, I teach the blind self-defense.
Okay. Are you blind yourself?
Yes, I am. Actually, I'm total right now. When I first started, I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. And this is when I first started training in the martial arts to begin with. And I had great eyesight at the time, and it slowly diminished to the point where right now, I can sometimes see light perception. So I'm almost total right now.
Oh, wow. Wow. How was the adjustment? I mean, it's been over the last 20 years.
Yes. Yeah. I've known about it for over 20 years. Okay. And, it's kind of like a grieving process, because you get through one stage and you say, oh wow, my vision is decreasing. And then, you come back to that same area a week later, 2 weeks later, and you go, holy cow, I was able to see that last week, and now I don't see it this week, and then, so it's a continuous grieving and challenging and motivating and, because now it kind of pushes you a little bit to continue to move forward. So, it's kind of like no choice,
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Jason. The name of your organization, Third Eye Insight, is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Yep.
And that's in, is that upstate New York?
No, actually it's on Long Island in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Third Eye Insight, everybody knows what the third eye is, right? In the center of your forehead where you get your insight from, So I thought it was appropriate for a blind organization, because we use more of our insight now than we do with our external sight.
Yeah, it's for me, Devin, I was first exposed to the disability that you have through another friend of mine who actually started in martial arts. The disease hasn't progressed as much as yours for him, or at least last I talked to him. But he has it too. And so a lot of the struggles that he was going through on the dojo floor, obviously not knowing any better, he attributed them to his disability, right? And we were just like, no, that's just martial arts, man. It's hard.
Right.
He never really quite, I don't think, or at the time, didn't really believe, that he could defend himself or that he could do it. And you see him years later, and now it's night and day, it's helped him, confidence wise,
yeah.
Things like that. And, And you were a big driving force in that, because when he wanted to quit, you know, we turned him on to you, talked to Devin, and you know, he'll and so you inspired him to keep going. So I want you to know that, you know.
Oh, wow. That's good to hear.
Yeah. And as far as I know, he's still training today.
Oh, good. Good, good. And yeah, as you said, you know, the martial arts isn't easy. And kind of in my situation, as I'm getting older, it's harder on the body too, you know. So, you know, then you become a better martial artist, a smarter martial artist, you know. and then almost like you get into the philosophy part of the martial arts, you know, because you realize that the violence part of it has no place, you know. So it's more of a spiritual journey, you know.
So how do you go about it? Like, let's say, for example, as far as self-defense goes, if somebody was to come at you, are you feeling for whatever you can get a hold of and to grab that and to try and take that to the ground? Is that,
That's a great question, because, honestly, obviously I can't defend against a punch, you know, I just can't see it. You know, but once I get a hold of you, then it's a different situation. You know, I tell all the students, don't go to the ground, because you don't know what's going to happen when you get down to the ground. You can have somebody else, there's another friend there with them. And meanwhile, you think you're grappling with one person and another friend's trying to kick you while you're down. So we teach a lot of how to orient yourself to the attacker, you know, like kind of knowing. If his hand is on my arm or got my chest, or, you know, I know which hand it is and I know where to move to get away from the other hand, you know, so I don't want to be on the inside of somebody and he's holding me one hand and he's punching me with the other. You know, I want to be on the outside of that punching hand, so it's harder for him to reach around and direct the punch. And at the same time, then try to do a wrist lock, or, you know, elbow joint lock or manipulation, or, you know, all these other things that you can do, kicking and, you know, so forth, and take out the knees and stomp the feet. And, you know, it's just a lot that you can do once you have the hold of the person. Okay. You know?
Yeah. It's as somebody that's done adaptive martial arts, to sit and listen to you speak. I mean, I have my struggles myself, and I'm like, man, this is tough. And just to know that sense of sight is not there, and for you to do it as well as you do, is amazing. And the way that you speak about, you know, feeling it and not actually, you know, seeing it and not being afraid to take a punch and then go to work. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah. And, you know, and I tell the students this all the time. If, you know, here I am, I'm blind. You attacked me. I'm defending myself. Let's say I get the higher hand. Now I take you to the ground. I put you in a wrist lock. I'm holding you there. What do I do with you? You know, here at that point, if I don't have anybody there to help assist me, I don't know what this guy's going to do if I let him back up. So I got to break something, you know? So, you know, if it's his wrist, to break the wrist, you know, if it's the arm, to break the arm, but, you know, I can't give this guy a second chance to come back at me. And then I'm in real trouble, you know, cause now he knows my disability and he knows not to grab, you know? So it's a tough choice there. Thank goodness I never had to make that.
Now, how do you go about as an instructor? I mean, how do you know that your student is doing the correct kata or whatever instruction you're happen to throw out? I mean, how are you able to do that?
Well, two ways. One is I have sighted volunteers,
okay,
who help assist. The second way is when it comes to the wrist locks and the setups and stuff like that, I do it to them. So they feel what the pain feels like. And then I let them do it to me so that I know that they're actually doing it correctly. You know, so I, you know, we do it with control, So nobody really gets hurt. And you know that, you know, if I have you in a wrist lock and your body is bouncing because you can't take the pain, your nerves, you know, I think I got it, you know. And they, you know, they the same way when they feel my body moving because of, you know, the response to the lock, you know, and that's a feeling that you kind of pick up and, you know, look for.
Yeah, it's definitely a feeling that you recognize real quick, for sure. You know, yeah. When somebody got you in a joint lock, you're like, okay, yeah, I'll say uncle seven times over. Cause,
that's right. Yeah.
So I have to ask you from a martial arts standpoint, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. How do you get yourself to go from being, you know, a person with sight to where you're at now? And how do you, I mean, the way you describe it, it's so effortless to you. Did you have any trouble? Or how did you have to retrain yourself, I guess, is the question I'm really asking.
Okay, so when I started, I had sight. So, and during that journey to black belt is when I found out that I was losing my sight. So I always kind of trained with the thinking that someday I may not have sight. So I would kind of close my eyes and feel it. And if I didn't see or feel it the right way, I'd open my eyes and look and say, oh, okay, that's what that is. You know, that's what that feels like. But then as, you know, my vision got worse, I had to adjust in my not only my thinking, but in my description, you know, because when we first started the class, I tell people, you know, something silly like, all right, grab the hand like this. And, you know, and half the people can't see that, you know, and then you got to realize, oh, shoot, I forgot, you know. And so now you change your description, and your description is in such a way that really anybody can do it. You know, close your eyes and this is what you're looking at. This is what you're seeing in your head, you know, kind of thing. So that was the challenge, and sometimes still is. And because I'll describe something and then, you know, nobody's moving. Like, what's the matter? You know, you don't get it? What, you know, you want me to say it again? What's the story? You know, but yeah, so, but the sighted volunteers, quite honestly, are, you know, a tremendous help.
Your sighted volunteers, if you ever have them throw on a blindfold so that you can kind of find out if what the way you're describing a move is being received or
right. Yeah, I have done that in the past. I haven't done that recently. Okay. Only because the class goes so fast, you know, and you know, we can do it, and it certainly is doable because we sometimes don't have volunteers and we do it on our own. But it, you know, it takes a little longer, and you know, I don't want to really waste class time. But yeah, I have done that in the past, you know, blindfolded people and even had different types of blindfolds, you know, one where you could just see through it. So you're kind of visually impaired, and, you know, one where it's total blackout. And and to a lot of people, they get to feel it, but then they get to take the blindfold off, you know, so it's like, yeah, wow, that's something. This is cool, but it's not cool. It's a way of life, you know. So this is just to show you that this is what we go through. But, you know, but I do get, you know, it does give people a sense of appreciation for, you know, what they do have.
Yeah.
You know, Charlie, we one time in class, everybody was blindfolded. I you know, we kind of did because I trained alongside regular students that were able-bodied. But then I also attended an adaptive class that was more suited to making adjustments. And that was one of the things, was we had such a gamut of disabilities within that class, so that like one week we would work blindfold. The next week we would work seated so that the, you know, people could see what it was like to be in a wheelchair. So we worked the different disabilities, and it gives you a great, great, appreciation for you know, for disabilities. I mean, as you found out when we did the experiment there at the radio station that time.
Yeah, I was going to say, my dad was a special ed teacher, and during his training, they had set up a device where almost like braces. So it was a wooden devices so that he would be able to feel what it's like for somebody who's walking in a brace, you know. And I thought that was pretty cool to, you know, at least give you that feeling of what they're doing, what's going on in their life, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So Devin, what do you, you know, what do you say to other martial arts instructors out there who may be apprehensive about, you know, working with people with disabilities? You know, what do you say to them, both as an instructor and then as an instructor with a disability of your own?
I tell them, send them to me. No, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. The you know, I think the big part of it is patience and almost trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes. You know, regardless of what it is, if there's a hearing impairment, you know, give yourself a hearing impairment so you can understand. A lot of people have hearing impairments that they don't want to tell you about, you know, and you say something and they're shaking their head, but you know, that's the wrong response, you know, and they know the right response, but they just didn't hear it, you know. And you know, coming from my perspective, and I still see this in class. When I train, they forget that you have a disability, which is good, you know, until they remember, you know. and I call it a lot of times, I get the blind treatment, you know. So watch out, here comes Sensei Devin. Watch out, you know. You know, everybody wants to help, and that's great, but I don't always need that help,
yeah.
You know. But I certainly don't turn it down either, because I know it's coming from a good place.
You know, and what sort of, because everybody thinks of modifications and they're like, wow, you know, I would do an adaptive program, but it's major modifications. It's, you know, it would be in-depth modifications. What has been your experience with modifications? Because basically what I have found is that the modifications are not all that as difficult as we sometimes think they might be.
Right. And the part of that is that we all have different abilities. So, you know, a technique that I may be able to do on somebody smaller may not be able to do on that same person. So you got to modify it, you know, you got to make it work. So it's all about editing and modifying and making it, you know, yours, you know. So and we were kicking the other day, and I was telling the students, I used to be able to kick somebody up in the chest. You know, now I want to take out their knee because I don't want to kick up that high. You know, so I got to modify my kicks. So, you know, all right. So I don't kick in the chest, I'm kicking the knee, you know.
more foot stomps.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so you got to modify and you change with age and you change with, you know, everything, body and everything. So.
Yeah. And then what do you say to the people out there? And that's the thing about this podcast is it's pretty straight up. And so I'm no fool. I know there are people out there that are watching this, listening to this going, oh yeah, well, how does a blind guy really do this? Like, can he really defend himself? So what do you say to that?
Well, it's definitely doable. You know, it's not like the TV on TV where, you know, you could somebody try to hit you with a bat and you duck, you know. We do practice that, but I mean, that would be a very rare situation where I'd be able to hear it and duck, you know, before I got hit by it. But yeah, it is all doable. And that's why the martial arts works for all types of people. So, you know, again, little people, tall people, short people, fat people, thin people, you know, all abilities. So
you said that you could hear the bat coming. Now, do you find that with the loss of your sight that your other senses have have kind of taken over and been more powerful?
I find that I'm more aware of my other senses. I was in a class the other day with my instructor, and I was just sitting there while he was testing some of the students, and I was trying to figure out how many students were in the room, you know, by the noise that they were making. And I got pretty close. And it was probably because one or two students were very quiet, you know. But I was able to pick out how many parents were in the room as well, by just listening. And then hearing when somebody came in the door, in the front door of the dojo, you know, I heard the door open, you know. And it's just things that all of a sudden that you just become aware of, you know. And then, of course, you know, smell plays a big role. You know, you walk through the streets and you smell everything, you know, people smoking, people drinking, people, you know, exhaust fumes, you know, fireplaces, the laundry, you can smell that, you know, as you walk past the person's house, you know. So
it's and so I have to ask you, and this may sound like a stupid question, but what's a bat sound like? Like when it's coming at your head, what does it sound like?
It sounds like a bad day.
There you go. Well, what do you say, Charlie? We take a little bit of a break here and then we'll come back.
So you're listening to Beyond the Label. It's a raw, real life look at living life with disabilities presented by the Adaptive Martial Arts Association, the nation's leading resource and support network for the adaptive martial arts community. AdaptiveMartialArts.org, breaking barriers one move at a time. Right back with Devin Fernandez, the founder of the Third Eye Insight in Ipswich, New York, coming right back.
Beyond the Label, presented by the Adaptive Martial Arts Association, the nation's leading resource and support network for the adaptive martial arts community.
It's no secret. Every martial artist, no matter their age, dreams of becoming a legend. A legend. Having their name listed among the greats like Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, and Jackie Chan. You can hide it or deny it, but you know it's true. Being a legend takes raw talent, dedication, big breaks, and an ability to survive a roller coaster called fame. But it also takes one more thing to go with it. The best gear and equipment in the world from the company that is martial arts, Century Martial Arts. They aren't just another martial arts supplier that's never set foot on a mat. They are martial artists, and that means they know their products and use what they sell. From uniforms and training gear to weapons and equipment, Century has it all for every martial arts style. Although you may never be listed among the greats, you can still shop like one at CenturyMartialArts.com and unleash your legend within. Century Martial Arts, the world leader in martial arts since 1976.
You're listening to Beyond the Label, a raw, real-life look at living with disabilities. Presented by the Adaptive Martial Arts Association. Check them out at AdaptiveMartialArts.org.
And we're back. It's Beyond the Label, a raw, real-life look at living with disabilities. Charlie Murphy here. That's Jason Davis. And we've got Devin Fernandez, Founder and program director of Third Eye Insight in East Islip, New York. Did I say that correctly this time?
Perfect. There you go.
All right. Well, yeah, we definitely appreciate you being here. Devin was born sighted, and I guess is the way to say, I'm not sure, but lost your eyesight at about what age?
I found out about the my condition. I have was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, I'd say probably about when I was turning 40.
Okay.
And so what is that? What does that disability entail? Like what causes it? And how does it progress? And does it progress the same for everyone, or is it different depending on your circumstances?
Well, retinitis pigmentosa is the degeneration of the rods and cones in the retina. And forgive me if I don't know which one does what, but one of them controls your night vision, your depth perception, and light sensitivity. So what happened with me is I was in an explosion. I was an electrician, and I was working on an electric panel, and it blew up in my face. At the time, I was blinded at the time, but momentarily from the flash. Years later, you know, I regained my sight. Years later, I was starting to have issues with my vision. The bright lights would bother me. Walking to somebody's house, and it took a while for my eyes to adjust. And even when I was in the house, when I went from room to room, it would, you know, depending on the light in that room, it would take time for my eyes to adjust. So I went to the doctor, and he says, "Oh, you know, you have retinitis pigmentosa." And he said it so nonchalantly, like I had floaters, or, you know, it was no big deal. I said, "All right." So I went home. A year later, my vision's getting worse. And I go back to him. He says, "I told you, you have this condition." So I looked it up, and it's a degenerative disease of the retina. And eventually it'll eat up my retina and cause blindness. And from my experience, I know other people who have this condition, and it hasn't progressed as fast as mine has, because they're almost at the same spot they were when I met them, you know, 10, 11 years ago, where 10, 11 years ago, I was able to see facial recognition, read off the bus, you know, so forth. And, you know, now I can't even see the bus, you know, so a big change in mine. And my doctor said that it usually burns itself out. What would he say? 10, 15 years once it starts. So I'm kind of coming up to that point now where it's burning itself out, but it's also already almost ate up my entire retina. Mm. So, you know, I would have wished it stopped sooner, but, you know, unfortunately it hasn't. And And through this journey, you know, I was able to see when I went to the retinal specialist the how it was decreasing, you know, because they took pictures of the retina, put it up on the screen, and you see some black spots. And I come back, you know, a few months later, and there's more black spots. And then a few months later, and then to the point where now I can't even see the screen, you know, because it just had all blacked out. But the you know, I feel that I will regain my sight back through technology, and, you know, gene therapy or stem cell research or any of the other areas that are being researched now. So I do have faith in that. And I would definitely, you know, suggest everybody to keep that same faith for themselves. You know, we've come a long way. I mean, look, people used to go blind from cataracts. And now they just pull the cataract out of the eye, and, you know, your vision is better, you know. So, you know, we're in the right track. You just have to be patient.
So was your condition, was that caused by the electrical panel explosion?
Or yeah.
Did it not have anything, one not have anything to do with the other?
Well, it depends on what doctor I went to. So one doctor said, no, this is hereditary. You got to, this is going to happen. The other doctor told me this was trauma to the eyes. And what it did is it triggered an autoimmune response. So the flash scarred my retina. And then my immune system said, let's get rid of the scar. But instead, it got rid of the retina. So, you know, so depending on which one you talk to, and it depends on how I feel on which one I believe, you know, but, yeah, but, you know, they come up with a therapy, you know, and my doctor said, don't be a guinea pig, you know, don't jump on that first clinical trial that promises this and that, let it, you know, work itself out before you, you try it.
You know, you're married, and so your wife has been with you through this journey. How has it been, you know, like we get your perspective and I'm like, man, I don't know if I could go through what this guy goes through or what my buddy Josh goes through, but I know that, with my own disability, it can tend to be sometimes tough on my wife. And so I wondered from that perspective, you know, what your experience was.
Yeah. And when this first happened, this explosion, my wife was 8 months pregnant. So I had the explosion, blah, blah, blah. They sent me into the hospital. I spent 2 weeks in the hospital in the burn ward. And, they told her, if it upsets you too much, we won't let you in. And then like 3 weeks later, my first son was born. So, from that almost that time there, she had a lot on her plate. You know, she had a newborn baby. She had me to deal with, and it took me, a couple of years to really, for the healing to settle in. But I've been blessed. I got a good woman. She's got my back. Of course, times are difficult for both of us. Sometimes a lot of it falls on her shoulders and, which I try not to let that happen. So that's why I do as much as I can, just to relieve some of the burden on her. But there's a lot of responsibility that she had to take on. She took on. And yet I hear of other couples who situations like this happen and the other spouse can't deal with it. I didn't sign up for this. This isn't the way I want my life to be. And they split up and, to each their own. I'm not judging anybody, but I've been very fortunate.
Yeah. Do you ever kind of get down on yourself or like, why this have to happen to me? Do you throw that pity party, as they say, every now and then, or are you pretty?
Yeah. Every now and then, I don't do that why is me thing, because that doesn't help. This is what it is. It's, this is what happened, and this is the situation I have to deal with. So it does stink, but I still, got to deal with it. But there's times, there's a lot of times, I wish I could do this, but I can't do that anymore. I wish I could drive. I mean, honestly, that's, I lost that privilege, a while back. But I mean, that loss of kind of freedom, yeah. It takes a toll. So, you're kind of dependent on other people and that stinks. But, you got to do what you got to do and you got to make things work and, you got to make the best of it. So, yeah, I think it's natural to get down and, but I don't dwell there. I don't hang there.
Have you found that as a result of the disability, you actually maybe do things that you never thought you would ever do before, like maybe picked up a different hobby, things like that?
Yeah. Actually, funny to say that because I always wanted to play the saxophone. So when I started losing my vision and I stopped working, I got in contact with an organization in Manhattan called the Lighthouse Guild that offered music lessons to the blind. So I started taking music lessons. So I started playing the sax, which I enjoy. I'm certainly nothing to talk about. And I'm not even amateur level yet, But that's something I always wanted to do. And I took that opportunity to do that, a few things, I arrange outdoor recreational events as well. And one of them was surfing. So when I had sight, I would never surf. I was like, I'm not doing that. What are you crazy? But when I lost my vision, I was like, well, you can't see, you can't be afraid of it, and then it was a blast. So I kind of flipped the script a little bit on that one.
Yeah, Devin, actually, you've come up to our neck of the woods here up in Vermont a couple of times and mm-hmm. been up on Killington and Pico with Vermont Adaptive Ski. Am I not correct?
That's correct. And you talk about an experience. Holy cow. That was a lesson in patience and trust and, being able to keep your heart in your chest and, it was very exciting. It was very exciting, going down the hill and you're waiting for somebody to tell you when to turn, And then as you're going, you know, well, this guy better tell me to turn soon because I feel like I'm going to go into the trees. And then he tells you to turn and you take that breath and then you go the other way and you say to start the same, you know, anxiety. But it's something I recommend. You got to get out there. You just got to do it.
Do you have a dog?
I do. I have a collie shepherd. And I got her here on Long Island at the Guide Dog, Smithtown Guide Dog Foundation. She's a fantastic dog. She's 10 years old. So they're kind of encouraging me to start looking for a replacement to retire her because they kind of need a break after a while, you know. Okay.
They always have to be on, right?
Yeah, they're always on. And, you know, a lot of times they kind of depend on the owner and the handler to guide them where where I want her to go. So if I let her make the decision, you know, sometimes I may find myself, you know, not where I want to be. So, and it depends. Like, you know, we do a lot of neighborhood walks. So we get to a certain corner and, you know, either I go right or left, depending on what I'm doing. And she'll like thinking, okay, let's go left and go, you know, come on, you know, we're going the other way. But I got to say, having the guide dog has given me tremendous independence. You know, thinking about having to retire her makes me, you know, think about what do I want to do? Do I want to get another dog at this point? But if I don't, then I lose some of my independence,
right?
You know, so, and it's a long commitment, you know, which I'm not afraid of that. I mean, we've had 5 dogs in my past, you know, all pets until I got her. But, and then, you know, now she becomes a pet and she's a pet in the household anyway, when she's off leash, off harness.
In wrapping up here, what advice would you have to a martial artist that's an adaptive martial artist? What do you say to somebody? What's your advice?
Well, if you want to have a longevity in the martial arts, you got to pick something that is going to work for you. So I would suggest that you try different styles, you know, because each style you learn would be something you put in your toolbox. You know, you may like where you are now and that's fantastic, but try something else anyway, you know, try a Tai Chi class and, you know, or Taekwondo or a grappling class and you may find that, oh wow, I like all this too, you know, or you may gravitate towards something else. But the biggest thing is not to give up if that's what you're interested in. You know, things that are worthwhile sometimes aren't easy to achieve, you know, but if you're persistent and you keep at it, then, you know, you'll get there. Don't look to rush, you know, rush the journey, you know. It could take a lifetime, you know, so take your time. And it's like music. You know, you find something you like and you play there and then, you know, you learn something else and, you know, you grow from that. And that's what it's all about. You know, we're all learning and growing and experiencing life, you know, in our own way.
Yeah. And now from the instructor perspective, what do you say to an instructor that may be apprehensive about working with somebody that has a disability? Whether that be a visual impairment, a physical impairment, what do you say?
You know, be patient, try to get into the student's head a little bit and, you know, see what works for them, see what frustrates them, how to get over that, you know, teach them how to get over that frustration, or how to deal with it. And most instructors, you know, they're all good instructors. They want to see their students grow. They want to see their students learn. And they too want to accept that challenge and take that challenge to help the other person. So if you got a good instructor, then you know it. Stick with it.
Well, it's a great thing you're doing. I'm glad you're enjoying it. It sounds like, and just just keep it up. And next time we talk to you, I want to hear you playing Baker Street on that saxophone.
No, I don't think you do.
How do folks get in touch with you?
Okay, so they can go on my website, which is www.thirdeyeinsight.org, all spelled out. They can reach me by phone at 631-445-3464. Or they can email me at senseidevin.thirdeyeinsight@gmail.com.
All right, Jason, let's wrap things up. Folks, you've been listening to Beyond the Label, a raw, real-life look at living with disabilities. It's been presented by the Adaptive Martial Arts Association, the nation's leading resource and support network for the adaptive martial arts community. AdaptiveMartialArts.org, breaking barriers one move at a time. Thanks again to our special guest, Devin Fernandez from Third Eye Insight. Jason, we'll see you again soon.
Absolutely, buddy. Another fun one in the books.
All right. We'll see you.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Label. If you'd like to be a guest on an upcoming episode, email contact@adaptivemartialarts.org. Beyond the Label is produced by JD Production and presented by the Adaptive Martial Arts Association, the nation's leading resource and support network for the adaptive martial arts community. Check them out at adaptivemartialarts.org. Breaking barriers, one move at a time.